I'm Dr. Ralph Ford, Chancellor of Penn State Barron, and you are listening to Barron Talks. My guest today is Bishop Dwayne Brock, the founder and chief executive of the Word of Faith Development Corporation. In addition to his ministry, he leads the Eagle's Nest Leadership Corporation, which provides educational and career development programming to at-risk youth in the Erie community. Welcome to the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, looking forward to a far-ranging conversation, but before we go further, I'm going to talk a little bit more even about your background and all the great things you've done in our community. You've all been right. A pastor for more than 30 years, clearly have a great commitment to helping others, and you've been a fixture in this community for quite some time, representing a lot of the issues that we really need to address on race, equity, representation, so much so that your voice is so central to the effort that the Erie Times News has called you Erie's CEO of Social Change. And, you know, I just wanted to start with, you know, how did you end up in Erie, Pennsylvania? You didn't grow up here.
Oh, wow. No, Ralph, I did not. I've been in the ministry since age 10. An interesting story. I was traveling and I was in Miami Beach, Florida. My godmother, who taught me a lot about church ethics and etiquette, her and I went to Miami Beach, Florida at the great Fountain Blue Hotel. It was there where there were 8,000-9,000 people there for a church convention. And I saw one of the bishops of the denomination sitting there, right there on the fountain. And, of course, I was scared as Dickens, and my godmother knew him personally. And a very interesting story. So my godmother, she said, she had a coat on. She said, hold this. And I did, and she walked over and talked to the bishop. And then, of course, introduced me, her godson, and Bishop Charles Herbert Foggy. And that name is very significant because he was chairman of the NAACP in Pittsburgh, personal friends with Thurgood Marshall and many of the civil rights leaders of our country. But nevertheless, he was there, and Bishop Foggy said, well, son, get me over to the other side of this hotel. I'm late for the bishop's luncheon. I don't want anybody to pause me. I don't want anyone to stop me. Hold my arm and get me over there. That was it. So I'm scared, but I took the man by the arm and we walked. Now, if you know anything about the Fountain Blue Hotel, it's one of the largest hotels around. And so it took us 20 minutes to get to the other side of the hotel. So we're walking and we're walking. I'm walking fast and so on and so on. So I get him to the luncheon eventually. And then I pull the chair out for him, put him in the chair. You know, said, you know, do you need anything else, sir, et cetera, all those type of dynamics. He said, no, but I like you. He said, son, I'm going to remember you. Little did I know that in 3 years, he would ask me to be his driver, and he would appoint me to a church called First Good Samaritan, A-M-E, Zion Church, in a city called Erie, Pennsylvania. I was the youngest appointment of any pastor in the AME Zion Church at that time. That was back in 1980, my first day in Erie, Pennsylvania, June 18th, 1980.
Yep. Wow. And you gave your first sermon at age 10, is that my understanding?
First sermon, I was young and dumb and gave my first sermon. Then it lasted a whopping 3 minutes. And at that time, our sermons could not be given. It was called a trial sermon. It could not be given to the entire congregation, but representatives of the congregation, these were the elders of the congregation, and they were called class leaders. So there was 12 of them. I had to stand in front of them, and, oh my gosh.
Wow.
And give this sermon, and I can see their faces right now. And understanding that within the black tradition, there's always call and response and whatnot. There was none of that at all. They looked at me with this stern look. So, oh, my God. And they had to actually judge to see whether God had called me into ministry or not. So I was on trial.
Yeah. Wow. So you knew your calling by age 10. You knew what you wanted to do.
That's unusual. I was always fascinated with church. I was just fascinated with church. And I didn't hear an audible voice from heaven and all of that type of thing. But it was just a knowing on the inside that this was something that I had to do.
And you grew up in Cincinnati?
Grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio.
And what was that like?
Oh, it was wonderful. Knowing, and everyone knew me in the city as a young minister, and I had opportunities to go to so many different churches and preach, irrespective of those denominations. And from that point, I was able to travel. And gosh, by the time I was 26 years old, I had literally ministered in every state in the country except Hawaii and Alaska. So I've been around pretty good.
Wow. Well, I mean, Cincinnati, you know, I think most people know it's really the South. It certainly feels like it to me when I go there. Great city, transforming, but it must have been different in those days. And what was it like? What were race relations like?
Well, it was a great city. You didn't see the violence like you see today, the shootings. And obviously, we are suffering from a cultural shift today. But it was great. I had wonderful opportunities. While I was in high school, I was also taking college courses at the Cincinnati College Conservatory of Music. And I have a background in music, believe it or not. I tell people say, well, I look like the tough guy in the room or whatever, but I played the violin for 30 years,
wow,
classical music. And so I was able, you know, I had some wonderful opportunities. We went on tour throughout the country. Cincinnati Youth Symphony Orchestra made a couple albums with the orchestra. Then I sung with the Cincinnati All-City Boys Choir. So I had some phenomenal opportunities growing up. My parents were real strict. And we had to learn chores, to do the chores before we could go out. And, you know, we didn't know what it was to use a mop on the floor. We had hands and knees. Remember that? Hands and knees. Get on your hands and knees and do the floor. We, you know, had our time to wash dishes and et cetera, et cetera. But it was a good, wholesome upbringing. I'm very thankful for that.
Well, so good. You learned so much from all of those things you hated while you were doing it. And I'll just add one last thing about Cincinnati before we move on. But, you know, when I drive there, I notice there are a lot of signs that make it really clear as you're driving there that it's a religious place. So I think religion plays a large place in the heart of that city.
One of the I had an opportunity to meet in my youth Archbishop Joseph Bernardine. And, of course, he was also Archbishop of Chicago. And he's passed on now, but that was a great experience for me.
So you came to Erie then. We're told, hey, go to Erie, 1980.
Go to Erie.
Erie was a pretty different place at that time.
Oh, my gosh. It was amazing. When I came to Erie, I thought I was in the deep South because there were no sidewalks where the church was at. And I can remember, I'm picturing it now in my mind when I got here, and understand that the church that I was assigned to back in 19, it was a sheet metal building. They call it a Butler building. Now it's okay, they've been able to make the modifications on that now, but think back in 1980, it was a warehouse building, but it was a church there. And my responsibility was to rebuild that church, rebuild the congregation, and get things rolling, and raise money, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that's what I did.
And where was it located?
32nd and Pennsylvania Avenue.
Okay, so not far from where you're at now.
Precisely.
Okay. So what were the challenges people were facing? What did you find in the community when you got here?
I found a intellectual and spiritual and economic stagnation, that people were by and large satisfied where they were at.
Mm-hmm.
And that angered me. And that anger became the foundation of what I do today, that I want better so I can do better and so I can be better. And that betterment ought become contagious. And so you have to be able to pry people from the conditioning of stagnation. And so I've had to teach people how to handle their money.
Mm-hmm.
you know, learn to put money up. Within the African American community, the financial literacy is just, you know, it's not
where it needs
there.
To be. Yep.
It really isn't. And back then, for an example, when I came to town, they were keeping the church money at home. The gentleman was keeping the church money at home under his mattress. I'll never forget that. And he got a little perturbed with me because I made them open up bank accounts, et cetera, et cetera. But they didn't have to do that at all. So there's been a stagnation. People had become satisfied where they were at. And then they defended the satisfaction. So I had to fight against that. I remember, you won't believe this, but I remember in the sanctuary now, in the Butler-style building, they had old-style pews, wooden mm-hmm. pews that were varnished. Okay? Mm-hmm. Think about it. Mm-hmm. In the summertime,
sticky.
It was sticky and sweat. So the women of the church would sit, you know, their nice Sunday best dresses, sit down on those sticky pews, and then the varnish would rub off on the dresses. Oh, yeah. And they would come, and I had to pay for that. I had to pay for people's cleaning bills and dresses, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, to the point that if you go there today, you will see a new, entirely new structure that I was able to rebuild the church. Mm-hmm. I designed the sanctuary and new pews, new altar, new everything there. But it was tough, but they were satisfied with that.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of coming together and saying, we have to do something about this because this is our central place where we worship God, et cetera, but they had become satisfied with it. And I've had people that were satisfied on welfare. They were satisfied getting a monthly check. They were satisfied not going to work. I had to go in and change that dynamic.
So how did you change it? What did you do? What were the steps you took?
Preaching, number one. I used my platform of preaching, which I still do today.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very pointed. Very pointed. One of my great friends who has passed on, he used to be the director of the Housing Authority, John Horan, would say that he had been to our services several times. He said, man, you go into the phone booth and come out like Superman. But I think it is very important that at that moment that we become very relevant in ministry and be able to reach people where they are instead of talking about the pie in the sky. That's going to take care of itself.
Mm-hmm.
But again, to be better, to have better so we can do better in life, that's been kind of my personal mantra.
Enlightening, practical advice.
Got to do it.
Yeah.
Ralph, think of the kids who don't have fathers at home. We have over 2 million people in prison in this country. Over half are African-American males. Who's at home?
Mm-hmm.
Who's teaching Johnny how to throw a baseball? Who's teaching Johnny about the birds and the bees?
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever. So he learns from television or learns from the street. And that's why we see this cultural decline today. And so it's been my mission, personal mission, to change that dynamic where I live right here in Erie, Pennsylvania.
Well, and we're going to get to a lot of those changes and talk about the corporations you've built. We're going to talk about the partnership with Penn State Behrend.
Okay.
But before we do, I'd just like to continue along the evolution. How did you see yourself becoming a community leader? So you had your congregation. Did you start to find role models out there? Was this something intentional in your mind?
There are people, I believe that God will place people in your life to help you develop and help you be who he wants you to be. And I have found that to be true. I remember one gentleman who's alive today, he told me, his name was Fred Rush.
Oh, yeah.
I know Fred.
Sure, I do.
Fred said to me, this was way back, 40 years ago. Fred said to me, he said, your success is not based upon your intelligence. Your success is based upon your relationships. That has been with me every day since then. So people say, I have the strongest, largest network in the city. Well, I've been pastoring for 43 years. Yep. In this city. So I've had time to develop this network of relationships. And that's where you learn. You know, people like yourself, the relationship I have with you, I'm learning. When you don't even think about it, I'm learning from you. My antennas are always up. I'm observing. I'm learning. Opportunities of chief executive officers all over the city, I'm learning from them. I sit on the board at Erie Bank and UPMC and Housing Authority and Hammond Health Foundation. I'm relationships. I'm learning. I never saw myself as a CEO of social change. Never saw myself of that. I just saw myself of having a relevant ministry and helping people and helping eradicate this demon of self-satisfaction.
Well, you're so right in my experience. I mean, you can be the smartest person in the room, but that doesn't always help. And right. I know I'm not that person. The thing that young people don't understand that, frankly, it just takes experience, is that idea of building a network and relationships. And I think they look at us, you know, more mature people and say, that just sounds like something my parents talk about. They go to all these functions and events. But anyways, you nailed it on the head. It is, you know, you have to build these relationships with people who can help you and you can learn from.
You got to do it. Always in a learning mode. And our young people need to understand that we don't live in a microwavable society. And they want instant gratification and have not put the work in and have not developed, which takes time to do so. So, those are little lessons of life that I learned across the years. So,
yeah, generally speaking, there are no overnight successes.
Oh, my
really
God.
Are
no.
not. Mm-hmm. You know, let's talk about some of the board service that you mentioned just a moment ago. You were chairman of the board for the City of Erie Housing Authority. I'd like to hear more about that. We have a housing crisis in this country. It's a real issue.
The Housing Authority, I've been a member of the board for 25, 26 years. I'm chairman of the board now. And what has happened, the Housing Authority, our theme is, it's all about people. Public housing should be a platform, okay, to do better, to be better, and to have better. A platform. It should not be a permanent place. For an example, one of my great friends who happened to be former governor of our state, mm-hmm. The first Secretary of Homeland Security, Tom Ridge, was in public housing.
Yeah.
And there are other people who have been in public housing, but they used it as a platform. But again, we see a cultural shift. There are people that will go to public housing and look at it as a lifestyle. And it shouldn't be a lifestyle. It ought to be, again, a platform to do better, to have better, and to be better. So all of the ancillary programs that we have with the Housing Authority is designed to teach them financial literacy, to teach them the first-time home buyers, you know, what does it take to build your credit to buy a home, recreational programs, cultural programs, different programs designed to enhance the quality of life of individuals. And so it is, and believe it or not, if you look at the statistics, the public housing is the safest place in the city of Erie.
Uh-huh.
Public housing. We have the Quebec unit, which is our own police
wow.
force, and they
That's
are
amazing.
Absolutely phenomenal because they understand the dynamics of community policing. So they will walk around, play with the kids, and they can call the kids by name, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, Johnny, watch it. And they develop a sense of respect. Then they can go into a home where, and of course, they understand that domestic violence is on the rise, et cetera, especially throughout, you know, the COVID season. So they've been able to develop a sense of respect in the community, where the residents respect the police, but yet the police respect the residents. And that's been one of the great things that we've been able to do with public housing.
And what I think I'm hearing you say is that's not true in every city. That's not
no,
true
God.
Everywhere.
No.
Of course not. God. Yeah.
No. So Erie is small enough, but yet has enough resources where we can make a difference in everything that we do. Erie's not like Cincinnati or Cleveland
mm-hmm.
or Pittsburgh or Philly. So, again, we're small enough, we have the resource and enough resources. For an example, you have this amazing gem, this institution called Penn State right here. a city within a city. And so many people are not aware of that. I'm amazed. I'm not just saying it. I am amazed when I come up here and I had the tour and to see the phenomenal work, a plastics manufacturing plant.
On campus.
On campus? Mm-hmm. The 3D printers. I mean, that will capture the attention of every young person on the street today. All of these opportunities that people need to know is right here in our backyard, a city within a city, Penn State Bears. So, I mean, it's great.
Well, we appreciate that.
I didn't mean to say all that then, well, but, you know, it's the truth, though. I mean that.
Well, thank you. And, you know, one of the things that, look, I came to Erie 30 years ago myself, so I'm a, and you grow a lot of affinity for the community, but it's parochial, and there's a lot of, you know, people haven't been out, even sometimes in their own city, to see what's going on. But we're changing that.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And before we talk about our partnership, there was just one thing that when we're talking about housing and just your philosophy that always comes through to me in our conversation. So as you make really clear, it's about, you know, character and having the right values and the right work ethic. But part of that is actually, I hear you say, financial literacy, wealth building, owning your own home. They're important to you.
Very much so. We live in a capitalistic society. Let's not kid ourselves. It's about the money. You could not do what you have done in this city called Penn State without some type of financial resources. So there are young people that understand that, but they don't understand how. They understand that they need the money, and so in many cases they will invent ways to get the money, illegal ways, mm-hmm. whether selling drugs or stealing or manipulating this or whatever the case may be. So I try to teach people how this thing works. We have a lot of people that are not bankable, so they get a check and they go to some type of check cashing store, which costs, you know, that's going to cost them money to cash their check, et cetera, et cetera. And they don't have a paper trail. So when you go to buy a home or whatever the case may be, you don't even have a paper trail. As I tell them, in essence, you don't even exist. Yeah. So I try to teach young people, you know, the American dream is that everybody would own their own home, and you can own your home, but it's a process. Let's get started in the process. If you have $10, it doesn't mean you spend $10. If you have $10, spend $5 and put the other $5 up or whatever, you know. So what you have, and I teach people, you don't let money dictate to you, you dictate to the money. It's a discipline. I tell them I can put, you know, whatever, $200-$300 on the table, let it sit there for 6 months and not touch it. There was a time I couldn't do that, but I had to learn and develop the dynamics of that, of understanding how money works so that I can, here we go again, do better, have better, and be better.
Absolutely. And it's just the necessary thing. It's not about becoming, you know, rich, but owning your own home, knowing how to manage money. They change your life.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about the Eagle's Nest Leadership Academy. So at some point you created this partnership with Hammett Health Foundation, UPMC.
Yes,
you're delivering workforce training. How did you end up in that that business, so to speak?
Wow. So my second church, I'm building my second church. I'm literally carrying bricks. So an older minister who had retired, Perry Keyes is his name. Perry Keyes is probably, he was 83, 84, maybe 85 years old. I hadn't seen him. I hadn't seen Reverend Keyes in quite some time. But as I'm carrying these bricks, he drives up an old beat-up Chevrolet. He parks. He gets out the vehicle, walks over to me, and he says, he said it was Reverend Brock. And he said, Reverend Brock, God told me to tell you that you are an eagle.
Wow.
He gets in his vehicle, back in his vehicle, and drives off. That was the conversation. But from that point on, I received some type of epiphany. Something happened. Something happened to me. And at that moment, I became instantaneously fascinated with eagles. So I went and got a book, And Chuck Swindoll is one of my favorite authors. Mm-hmm. And the name of it, this particular book of his was Living Above the Level of Mediocrity. And on the picture of every chapter, there's a picture of an eagle. I said, oh my gosh, you know. I said, what's God saying to me? Then I did my research on eagles. And I preached 1,000 sermons on eagles, you know. And from that point on, I said, our responsibility is to nurture young adults, to teach young adults, and stir the nest. They can't stay there in the nest, but stir the nest and teach them how to fly. Mm-hmm. And then they can pass that on to their little eaglets. So I'm at the board. Yeah. I'm at the board meeting one day, UPMC board meeting. Jim Fiorenzo was the president at the time.
Sure, yeah.
And I'm thinking, and my mind goes off to remember the old candy stripers back in the day. Mm-hmm. So I said, boy, it would be great if we had that same thing, candy stripers. We could take young people off the street, give them opportunity, show them a culture that they otherwise would never see. So I met with one of the officers there, Jim Donnelly, who's the chief nursing officer. Mm-hmm. And from that point, I gave him my idea, went to Fiorenzo, gave him the idea. And it started from that point on of choosing young people, young adults in the community, and letting them go through a crash course with me, a boot camp with me, and then go to work in the hospital. And that's where it happened. Now, an interesting thing about that is UPMC would pay, okay, direct deposit. That's how they pay, direct deposit. Mm-hmm. How can these kids get paid? They don't have bank accounts. So again, we had to go back to the financial literacy. We had to go back to that whole dynamic and teach them about financial literacy, teach them about character. It's not going to hurt you to go into work and say, yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. It's not going to hurt you. Number two, everybody's not going to like you. Everybody's not going to celebrate you. That's life. You're not going to change that. Keep in mind, your goal is to go to work and bring a paycheck home, provide for yourself and your family. Show an interest. When you go on the actual interview, all right, they know within 3 minutes whether they're going to hire mm-hmm. you or not. The interview may last 20, 25 minutes, but they know. So your responsibility is to sell yourself. So, I mean, and so we've talked about going to work on time. You got to have a plan A, plan B, plan C. You have to be able to go to work and show yourself as an asset to that company. And the day you become a liability is the day that you're out the door. Mm-hmm. So those are the lessons that we've had to teach as far as Eagle's Nest is concerned.
Now, how many people have gone through the?
Oh, about 200.
Wow. So then that wasn't enough. You decided you had to start an elementary school.
Had to start a school. And I'm excited over the school. I promised the school district that I would not do a charter school, because that actually takes funds away from. Mm-hmm. So I said, but what we'll do, we'll stay up under the jurisdiction of the school district.
Smart move.
And Brian Polito, superintendent, he's been absolutely phenomenal, just great with us. And so we have 77 kids now. We're going to add, we have kindergarten, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. So next year, we're going to have kindergarten, 1st grade, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. So we're going to add a grade and solidify that gap. So it has been great. Challenges? Yes.
Sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. I went to one of the, I think it was the Seed School in Baltimore, and then went over to one of the other schools over in Cleveland just to take a tour and et cetera, et cetera. And they found very successful schools. They said, Bishop, it's going to take you 13 years. I said, it's going to take you 13 years to get the thing up off the ground. I'm telling you. I said, oh, no.
I don't have that time.
Oh, no. But, you know, I'm thinking this guy was right when he told me that. Because there are challenges. And it's not, because I believe in what I call the learning triangle. You got to surround the child, and we call them scholars, mm-hmm. but you got to surround them with the parent, the teacher, and a mentor. the parent, the teacher, and the mentor. Okay. We're working on, of course, we have the teachers, working on mentor. Erie Insurance has been, I mean, they're just a godsend. They've been helping us with mentors and whatnot. And it's been a challenging to get the parents involved in the education of their own mm-hmm. children. So that's the fight that we're fighting right now.
Well, if you go down there, you know, and I've been down a few times, what you see is really different than you might see in other schools. Yeah. And all of the kids are dressed in uniforms, but they've got a creed that you go through. And I think it's really interesting to hear that.
Yeah, they have to do a creed, do the pledge and a creed every day to kind of keep that instilled in them. And I want them to grow up and be kids. Like, I understand, look, yeah. Boys are going to be boys, mm-hmm. you know. They got testosterone, and they're going to, I don't want any fighting. I don't tolerate the fighting, but they're going to push and shove every now and then. I don't let them know all that, but I understand. And when they see me coming, oh, my God. You know,
you're an intimidating figure.
Yeah, well, hey, there's Darth Vader. You know, they could tell from. And then, so what I'll do, I'll walk by, and I'll slap the young boys in their midsection. That's my love language to them. And then they'll rub my bald head, you know, stuff like that. Now they want to wrestle me and they want to play me in basketball, which I am terrible in basketball. All I know is the ball is round. That's about it. But we have a relationship, and I appreciate that. But I'm really looking forward to some great things coming out of the Eagles Nest School.
Well, it was about 3 or 4 years ago that you and I met, and because, you know, a mutual friend, Tom Hagen, told me, you should go meet Bishop Brock. I want you to do that. And I remember, I actually might have even been in the pandemic by the time I made my first visit there.
Yeah.
Just being really, you know, piqued by what you were doing.
Tom Hagen is one of those, of course, everyone knows him as a philanthropist and et cetera, all that type of thing, owner and chairman of Erie Insurance, Fortune 500 company. But I've had a relationship with him that was not about the philanthropy at all. My relationship with Tom Hagen has been the philanthropy of his mind. Mm-hmm. I've wanted to pick his brain. And I've had the opportunity to sit down and have candid conversations and pick his brain. And from that point, we've just become very close. He's a very close friend of mine. I'm very protective of him. And love the ground he walks on. Because people, they don't know him. There are people that think they know him, but they don't know him. And he is a phenomenal man.
He's an amazing individual for all he's done, accessible, cares about the community, you know, we go on and on.
Semper servientes is the words that adorn his coat of arms, which means always serving. And he's kind of instilled that in me about always serving. Yeah, it's going to be tough. Yeah, it's going to be hard. But always serving. So that's another story.
Life is hard. It doesn't owe you anything.
Oh, God, I'll tell you.
If you think otherwise, it's going to teach you a different lesson.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Yeah. Well, let's fast forward. In December of this year, we announced a partnership, and I think we surprised a lot of people in a good way. Penn State Behrend at Eagles Nest. And why don't you tell people about what it is we're doing in this partnership?
Well, this is one of the highlights, I believe, in Erie, Pennsylvania. To have this noted great institution to actually come to the inner city and have a presence in helping the marginalized of our city. That's absolutely mm-hmm. phenomenal. As we have talked, I've said that if you expect members of the African-American community, Hispanic community to come up here, it's just not going to happen. So why not come down there? And then, I mean, you took, for crying out loud, you took the challenge and you said, we're going to make it happen. You moved with lightning speed to make this thing happen. Now, you have to understand, I'm so excited about that because think about this, Ralph. Think how many folk that I've met with in boardrooms across the years, in 43 mm-hmm. years, and how many people use a lot of pious platitudes, and that's just about it. And then you leave and you never see any results for anything. But you say we'll make it happen, and you got right on this thing with deliberate speed. And so it's giving our scholars an opportunity that they would in no wise ever have. The kids came up here, I think it was a couple weeks ago.
They were here last week or the week before.
They were talking about it. Yeah. You know, the drum, you had some fascinating drummers up here.
Yeah, we have Music at Noon series, and we bring
it.
It's a phenomenal program.
And that's what changes the trajectory of people's lives, when they can see and you open up a world of possibilities to them, is phenomenal. So Penn State coming down and providing teaching and sharing and engaging with these young people, and we're planning now even to bring their parents in mm-hmm. to, it's just a lovely, loving relationship, because we'll be making the major announcement within just a couple of weeks about Erie Bank going to 10th and Parade, which is, you know, my project. But I was just talking to the president of the parent bank, CNB Bank, about Ralph Ford and Penn State and how we're going to build this training center. And they're going to actually make the announcement. Training center is going to be built on 10th Excellent. And Parade, and we'll have Penn State right there. Penn State is going to have a significant presence in the inner city in Erie, Pennsylvania. I mean, I'm just tickled pink over it.
Well, you've gone on, but I will, you know, I appreciate the very kind words. But I'll tell you this, though. The reality of why I think we could move with lightning speed and why it works so well was, A, I think we were just philosophically aligned from the beginning. And then our team here was in, when I say team, not just the leaders. We had senior leaders here on campus step up and say, yeah, we're in. We'd like to do that. We have a lot of faculty and staff and students who were, again, it was once we told them what we were thinking, they all said, oh, we're going to do that. And we already do a lot of outreach in the community. And I think you hit the nail on the head in that we bring a lot of students here. We do go into schools, but we haven't been down in your school. We haven't been in your neighborhood. And what's different is this is persistent. We're there 3 days a week right now delivering programming. Yeah. And so far, knock on wood, we seem to be able to deliver. And, you know, it's people are excited to be there. And they go down there and they're, you know, in a way, volunteering their time. So it's a real testament, I think, to your organization and ours. So it just fits so well.
It's a great fit. And again, we go back to relationships because, you know, Tom Hagen, I call him, you know, the big guy is what I call him. But he was able to bring us together. And without him, who knows, maybe we would have never met. And we wouldn't have this relationship.
Probably not.
And probably not.
That's right.
Because we have two different worlds, for crying out loud. But now we've come together. So I'm really excited over it.
Let's talk a little bit about the actual, how's it going? And, you know, are we living up to the promise so far? I haven't even asked our team, but we've been there for a month. And what's your take? And how will you know when it's successful?
Well, when you see young people start to dreaming, when you see them, their language begin to change, and they start talking about opportunities and the possibilities, and you are opening the door of possibilities for them, and when you see that, then you know you're hitting grand slams every day. It's a process, yes, indeed, but it's a process that is necessary for us to take advantage of. And it's great. It's beyond, my words cannot really express, because I've been there. You have to understand, I buried more kids in this city than all the other local pastors combined. Can you imagine how many of I buried kids who were shot, kids mm-hmm. who were shot and killed, kids that died of drug usage and drug overdoses and and violent deaths. I've had to identify bodies, and I mean, you know, it, and so I get to the point, you know, I see the same people at the same funerals. What do I say? What do I say different? So that's why ministry is so important to me, of developing a sense of opportunity for young people, irrespective of their race, color, or creed, to change their trajectory. I was amazed that I went to my first meeting at, you know, I sit on the board of Erie Bank, so we had a big retreat. And the parent company, CMB Bank, so you got about 75 bankers there. I said, what the heck am I doing? What am I doing here? You know, I walk in the room. Here's a white young lady runs up to me. Bishop Brock, I saw your name on the program. It gives me the biggest hug in the world. You taught me in school.
Wow.
She's one of the vice presidents of the bank now.
What a moment.
Oh, my gosh. It that, you know, it was just, I just did, I drove down to Clearfield, okay? And I mean, this is so significant. I drove down to Clearfield for Black History Month. They wanted me to give a presentation. So I have the chief executive officer of the bank at my right, and I have his vice president at my left. So I'm giving the Black History presentation, so on and so on and so on and so on and so on. And we get to going. I didn't know this thing was being broadcast all over. I didn't know. So we get into it. I mean, it got to be very emotional in a very positive way. And so I walk out, and people have their tissues and handkerchiefs in their hand, shedding tears. And this same young lady, I didn't know her office was there, she came out and said, I told you all, I told you so. Yeah.
You know, that's the great thing about ministry, teaching as well. We get to see, and sometimes it's so surprising, 20 years later, someone shows up in our lives that, you know, we really had an impact.
Yes,
I want to talk about one more thing as we're getting close to the end, and that is the East Side Renaissance and this whole project of, you know, Penn State or Penn State Barron at Eagle's Nest is part of that. But this is a big vision, and you and other people, community leaders, are really trying to make a change. What is the idea?
Well, I had, again, I'm going back to Tom Hagen. We were talking one day, and we were talking about doing some things through the Housing Authority and then and Erie Insurance, creating a relationship and taking the idea from 6th and Parade up to 12th and Parade, because Parade Street used to be the main artery within Erie, Pennsylvania, and a very wide street, but now it's the gateway into the African-American community by and large, and it's been neglected across the years. It's just become dilapidated, bottom line. And so I had an idea of investing in Parade Street and bringing various companies into Parade Street, doctor's offices and banks and stores and retail outlets and all of that. And I talked to, again, the big guy, Mr. Hagen. He said, let's make it happen. So they have been, Erie Insurance has been, they were able to, however they do what they do, but they were able to purchase, I think it was close to 18 properties, and then turned them over to my nonprofit. And then they turned around, and you won't believe this, but they gave me a $2 million line of credit to fix these properties up. Now, with that, of course, I have a fiduciary board, and we have to go do our due diligence and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But they've given me complete access administratively to whatever I need from that company to get this thing together. And I have two partners, Marcus Atkinson and Matt Harris, that helped me to get this thing rolling. So, again, so we're excited because in just a couple of weeks, the formal announcement will be made that Erie Bank will be building on 10th and Parade. We're working along with the Hammond Health Foundation, and we're hoping that there'll be another announcement a couple weeks right after then about them doing some things right there on Parade Street. So with the bank coming, what we want to do is develop this first-time home buyership program. We need Penn State's program to come in there and to run that and to teach these young people about what it takes to buy a home, what it takes to manage your credit, to build good credit, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it's almost like the stars are aligning to make these things happen. And so Erie Bank, Penn State Barron, Erie Insurance, right there is the Eastside Renaissance. So I chose the name because I, being somewhat of a history buff, history teacher, and I'm very familiar with the Harlem Renaissance and how it was a rebirth of culture and a rebirth of that area. So I said, let's do the same thing right here in Erie, Pennsylvania.
Well, so many great partners, so much, you know, hope, and I'll say, you know, great fit with our Center for Financial Literacy. And we love to get out in the community. So, again, a perfect fit. Well, we are pretty much at the end of our interview. What gives you hope looking forward?
Relationships, again, because I believe that with these relationships, they are purpose-driven. And it was not purpose-driven, why have the relationship? If that kind of makes any sense. So it lets me know that it can change. Why would God put us together if it can't change? Why would God put a Penn State and an Eagles Nest and a Bishop, a Ralph Ford and a Dwayne Brock come together if God did not have expectations for something good to happen? That's kind of the way I'm looking at it. So I think that great things are on the horizon. And, you know, our local congregation, I tell them about that. Something good is about to happen. And I mean that. We're not just going to be idling, but we're going to put the vehicle in drive and shift some gears.
No more status quo.
You better know it. You better know it. And so I'm very grateful for this forum. But I want all the listeners to know that I'm very grateful for you, because you have been over backwards to make some things happen that otherwise would not happen within our community. And I want to say thank you to you publicly.
Well, I will say you're welcome, and but right back at you in that, boy, I think we've hit it off really well from the moment we met, and I think we found the right way to work together, and we're just excited about this. We're excited always about the future of Erie, Pennsylvania, and its people. And it does come down to its people, and that's what matters. Again, thank you so much, Bishop Brock, for being my guest today. I'm Chancellor Ralph Ford, and you have been listening to Barron Talks, a really special episode today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.